It's like hoodie weather in Michigan. It's getting a little colder, but I, you know, whatever. I still wear a hoodie. So I wear the Brainstorm Brewery hoodie most of the time. And I just kind of developed a strategy for dealing with people when they ask, like, oh, the Brainstorm Brewery, where's that? It gets kind of funny. My buddy Joey D said somebody told him, oh, I think I've been to that brewery. And he's like, oh, okay. But people ask me, like, where's the Brainstorm Brewery? I'm just like, I don't want to explain what it is because I figure that takes too long. So I'm just sort of like, oh, it's a real small-scale microbrewery. We've only made one batch of black IPA, and, you know, that's all we've done. And sometimes people are like, oh, that's really neat. And sometimes people want to ask me 17 more questions. So one time I was wine tasting with my wife and her friend, and some guy sees the hoodie. He's like, oh, the Brainstorm Brewery, where's that? I'm like, oh, it's a real small-scale microbrewery. We're sort of not up and running yet. He's like, oh, where are you going to be based out of? I'm like, you know, Kalamazoo probably. He's like, oh, are you in the Kalamazoo Microbrewery Home Association? I'm like, ugh. You know, I wanted the conversation to be over. And so the guy's like, do you have a website? And I'm like, and he gets out his smartphone. He's like, yep, found it. You guys got a website. And I was like, the website doesn't really have anything to do with the brewery. He's like, oh, you got all kinds of stuff in here. Finance 101, what's that about? Hey, there's a picture of a lady on here. That's really weird. And he went on for like 10 minutes. And I was like, hey, what winery are you guys going to next? And then I made sure we went somewhere else. Because the longer he looked at the website, the more he's going to be like, what is this? What am I looking at? So I don't know if I want to change my strategy at all.
I hope he's a devoted listener now.
Oh, he's probably listening. Dude, he's like, that's me.
That guy just really wanted to be friends with you. And yeah. You were just sat there lying to him.
Oh, that guy's a nerd. Whatever.
I think it's a good strategy because I try to explain, oh, it's a podcast. And they're like, a podcast about what?
Beer?
And I'm like, Magic Finance. I'm like, oh, no. I'm just going to say it's a brewery.
At least they knew what a podcast was. A lot of people don't even know that.
I live in San Francisco, beer? You know. We Dang, have technically logical.
What is your guy drinking? If
technically logical? Marcel.
I try to say it right, but then Jason's talking over.
Technically logical. That's what they have out in California.
They're technically logical compared to, you know, Oklahoma, where they're technically illogical.
I mean, I'll give you that.
Yeah, but, like, saying that you're better than Oklahoma at technology is sort of like praising herpes for not being AIDS.
Hey, we have bums that will sit there collecting change while they look at their iPhone to pass the time. So, I mean, there's that.
That's unprofessional. That's like asking for money for food while you're eating.
Unprofessional.
Yeah. If you're a panhandler and you're paid to panhandle, that's your profession. So have a little bit of pride.
Jason demands professionalism out of his bums.
So what about you, Ryan? I heard that you had an argument with someone about a NASCAR guy.
Yeah. I'm back home. And actually, it stemmed from the Brainstorm Brewery shirt and then me talking about my buddy because he was talking about rookie. And I was like, yeah, my buddy just won rookie. And he started going on like, I don't know, he just kind of asked like what magic was. And I made the mistake of describing like worlds. And he was like, make it sound like some sort of sport. That kind of does a disservice to sports. And I just like saw all the NASCAR stuff. And I was just kind of like, mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't get into an argument really. It's not worth it. But I mean, yeah. I kept my mouth shut because I've learned.
It's not a real sport like 1,000 left turns.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I can't even like disagree that it's not a sport in the conventional sense, but I can disagree that it's less of a sport than other things that were being supported. It's nothing super exciting. It's just like, well.
It happened. Yeah. So this is, I guess we're into podcast now. This is Brainstorm Brewery. Episode 24. If you don't know, we're a Magic Finance podcast.
Episode 24?
124. I'm sorry. I had to take it back. Yeah. So we just heard from, Jason, then Ryan respectively. And then I'm Marcel. And then we got Corbin here. So Corbin, this talk about, you know, magic being a sport kind of reminds me of the South Park episode they had.
Yes. If you guys did not see the South Park last week, it was all about Magic the Gathering. It was called Cock Magic, the premise being that people are cockfighting, only they're playing Magic instead. I have to say it was not as good as the World of Warcraft episode from a few years ago, but I think as Jason put it, it didn't come off completely making fun of Magic either, so that's probably, you know, all in all, a win.
I disagree.
Cheating, butt cracks, virginity. It was fine. it was, they mocked, the younger kids a little bit. Kyle, Cartman and Stan for acting like magic was kind of hardcore, and that's how the episode progressed. Sort of like, oh, you think that's hardcore? We have magic cockfights.
Well, I actually thought, like, I actually liked that part of it because, I mean, if it's going to be portrayed as one thing or the other, it being portrayed as hardcore and exciting is better than it being portrayed as nerdy and played by virgins, so.
See, I disagree. I kind of was really disappointed in the episode. I mean, sure, we didn't get butt crack and magic players in our community get destroyed by South Park, which could have happened in a very bad way, but it, to me, it was just not funny. Like, there's some chuckle moments.
Yeah, it really wasn't a great episode overall. Like,
no, it was another typical of South Park in the last 8 years where the best part of the episode is Randy Marsh. Like, he's the only decent character left on that show.
The World of Warcraft one from a few years ago, both, you know, parody World of Warcraft and it did the whole thing. While obviously it had its crude South Park moments, it was actually overall pretty funny to people who played the game. Whereas the magic thing,
it could have been any card game. You're right.
Yeah. They just threw a name. Like the only thing I got out of it was, why didn't Crippling Blight kill the Fugitive Wizard?
Yeah. At least they named real actual cards. That was kind of cool.
Some actual cards, and they made some other cards up, which was weird. Did you guys notice that Kenny's first opponent was Darwin Castle?
Yes.
And Tommy Wallamies with his weird multicolored hat was sitting in the background behind him. I thought that was weird. I wondered if they Googled the Gathering Pro and just like saw what a couple guys looked like.
I mean, do we know, like, is that how it happened to go, or do we think that was, you know, done on purpose or what?
Dude, that looks 95% like Darwin Castle.
I mean, it does look like Darwin Castle.
They didn't pull that hat out of their ass. They Googled Magic Pro and a picture of Tommy came up for sure.
Yeah.
And well, the commentator was definitely Rich Hagen and Brian David Marshall combined. Definitely seemed like that.
I mean, this is what somebody describes South Park as these days. And I used to watch the show a little bit and I don't watch it a ton anymore, but it's just like you throw darts at two subjects and then combine them. And in this one, they got Magic the Gathering and cockfighting.
So what'd you think, Ryan?
I mean, I didn't actually see the episode all the way through, but I didn't think it was terrible. I don't really watch South Park, so I don't really care for the humor in general. I'm kind of the, like, stray away from stupid shit like that. I don't know, I don't find it entertaining, but it wasn't the worst episode of South Park I've had to listen to, so.
Yeah, I really haven't watched it since college either. Just, I don't know.
So stray away from stupid shit, it makes it seem like you weren't in GP Jersey then.
I mean, that's a different kind of stupid shit, like. I don't know, I feel like South Park has gone the way of Family Guy and just turned into a bunch of fart jokes, so. Maybe I'm wrong there, but.
I mean, the difference is South Park has always been fart jokes.
No, South Park actually got to a point where it was really good, and then it just, I haven't seen it recently, so I can't speak on recent episodes, but I know there was one point, I was like, they're really pushing the boundaries on a lot of things.
Well, I mean, so did Family Guy when it first came out. Shows don't always necessarily age great.
Well, recently, actually, Family Guy went to the point where I was like, oh my god, this is like worse than South Park. So, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, it's what they can get away with. You know, the fact that Family Guy was taken off the network and they, like, popular demand brought it back. He thought he had latitude before. Man, when he came back and sort of was like, okay, well, I'm going to make 9 more animated shows and you're going to run them all on Sunday. And Fox is like, yes, whatever you say.
Mm. It's the erosion of American values. It's like Black Friday. I'm boycotting any store that opens on actual Thanksgiving.
That's super annoying to me because I actually want to go do Black Friday.
Those people probably get paid like
time
and a half, double time. Like I volunteer to work those days.
Give them if people volunteer, that's one thing. But you got to think about it. Like, what about the people who actually want to go to the store as well, who are giving up their Thanksgiving to go? It's not just the workers. Like, I can't go do the things I'd like to do because they open at 6 o'clock on Thursday.
Gives a shit. Don't want to go, don't go. If you want to go, go. Oh my god.
See, I don't think most of the workers.
I literally can't fathom this being an issue at all. Like, if the stores, if there aren't enough people going, the stores won't open. So clearly there's a demand there.
No, but see, it's a constant, they're gonna, if you build it, people will come. And it's like, you know, there's some workers that want to work that, but there's probably a majority of workers that don't. And now they're being forced to because the stores are being opened, you know, 6 p.m. on Thanksgiving. That means they gotta be there like 3. I mean, what time do they get with
Thanksgiving? It's a Thursday! They probably don't want to work every fucking Saturday, but they have a shitty retail job, and they'll either kill themselves or get a better one. Like, if you don't like your shitty retail job, then get a better job.
You know what? Jeez, you know what? I'm sorry. You've been living that money draft lifestyle a little too hard.
I worked shitty retail jobs. I didn't like working Saturdays. I loved working Thanksgiving. Who gave a shit? It's a Thursday.
I mean, it depends on if, yeah, but your family probably wasn't as family oriented. Like, I didn't mind working them either, but I knew a ton of people who wanted them off because their family did a lot of stuff. Like, for me.
Oh, okay. Like, so one you're going to go straight to the ad hominem attack because you don't agree. That's cool.
No, I just,
oh,
like,
you
I don't,
just don't care about Thanksgiving because your family sucked. All right, cool.
No, I'm, no, I have nothing to do with that. I'm just saying, like, some families are serious. Like, if you're not there, your family looks down on you. And my family, like, I worked some Thanksgivings because it didn't matter as much, but there were people who, like, if they were not, if they were to work Thanksgiving, it would not be okay.
Or crazy and, talk. Maybe people just want to be with their family on Thanksgiving and it doesn't yeah. have to do with being looked down on.
Yeah.
Anyways. I do agree, Marcel. I wish places just opened at 6 a.m. on Friday so I could do everything with Thanksgiving on Thursday, get up at 3 a.m. and go do Black Friday. The only reason that that model changed is because during the recession, retailers were looking for ways to, you know, get ahead of the curve, and that just led to opening earlier and earlier.
They're trying to
and
compete it, with Amazon. That's all it is. Cause
as soon as they
–
but it's
on the internet.
I mean, yeah, it's all a combination, right? Because it was also during the recession – Amazon is, I mean, Amazon's always been growing. It's a constant thing, but the opening earlier trend didn't really start until the recession hit.
Well, it was last year. Last year was when they had the first time. No, it was eroding.
It's been eroding for several
years. I've been very part of Black Friday. I was very much part of it. So I've seen it. Like last year was when they started opening on Thanksgiving Day. And that was like
yeah,
the last 2 hours.
Before that, it was midnight. And
yeah,
before
it was
that,
midnight,
it was
like
4 a.m. Like,
yeah, I know.
Yeah. So I'm saying it's been going this way ever since the recession started because retailers needed to get ahead.
So where's it going to stop? Are they going to be like, we're just open all day Thanksgiving. Fuck it. You know, that's where it's going to go eventually.
I mean, honestly, if you're making your employees come in at 10 a.m. on Thanksgiving anyways, you may as well open early Thanksgiving morning so we can go do our shopping and then go eat Thanksgiving.
Oh my God. This is disgusting. This is appalling part of American society. You know, it's kind of like.
Capitalism, Marcel, love it.
There's demand for it. I don't see why anybody who doesn't work a retail job cares. The only thing I saw that I didn't like was there was a mall that forced stores. It fined the stores if they weren't open. And they're like, we're not going to do enough business to bother opening. And the mall's like, we'll fine. See that?
I agree with that more than I agree the other way around. I feel like if you're going to go that far, you have to go all the way. Otherwise, you have half the stores in your mall looking open. And part of what you're signing an agreement with the store is like you have to keep your store in reasonable shape and to not be open on significant days like that. It looks bad on the mall if only half the stores are open. Like, I don't necessarily say I agree with any of it, but if you're going to go so far as to say the other stuff's okay, then how is that wrong? Like, why are you drawing the line there?
Because you're forcing a store to lose money. If the store thinks they'll make money and they want to open, then they'll open. But
so don't
the
be
store
in a mall.
Doesn't. Okay.
Yeah. If you could sit there and say don't have a retail job, then don't be in a mall.
I mean, Ryan's right. They do sign a contract for that.
Yeah. Like, you're
I feel a lot worse. That said, I feel a lot worse for employees being made to come in than I do for a store being forced to open after they signed an agreement that they could be forced to open.
Agree, but the trickle down is that the store's forced to open and not.
I mean, I don't agree with any of it, obviously.
Exactly.
You don't think it's worse to work Saturdays than like one random Thursday? That's silly.
I'm completely unsure if Jason is trolling or is just simply this apathetic. Let's talk about Grand Prix Jersey where good things happened for you guys because you had a lot of fun and I didn't.
That was like a month ago.
Oh my gosh. We told people last week we were going to talk about it, so. I mean, how did you guys spend your weekend up in Jersey?
We spent it in New York, and it was quite awesome. JR, he has a mansion. I didn't realize that. Like, he lives right there on the water, so we were able to, like, actually go fishing in the Hudson River from his balcony that he has. And then we were looking around with the telescope, and we were able to see all kinds of wild stuff.
You're actually making me wish I'd gone, because that sounds like a lot of fun.
It was a blast.
Yeah, the Money Draft Mansion's on point.
Yep. And you get to throw things at the pores down in the street. It's great.
Oh my God.
That's that Money Draft life. You don't even know.
This cast just got to be titled like, Why Ryan and Jason Don't Care About Other People.
No, the pores is what the Money Draft people call it.
Oh yeah, and you're adopting it.
Well, I mean, if you're in the Money Draft Mansion, you're...
yeah.
When in Rome.
Exactly.
Well, no, be serious. So like JR's apartment's nice, but it was like super small and like
it wasn't that for New York. That was not a small apartment.
No. Well, I'm just comparison to the rest of the United States. Like San Francisco's got insane, you know, housing prices. So there's
This is a conversation I can win at. Let's talk housing prices in Oklahoma.
We're not.
that you're going the reverse of winning.
Yeah.
Oh.
But yeah, like the definitely you can see the step between San Francisco and New York, like where, you know, like how much money can get you square footage wise. So it's kind of interesting. I could definitely say, I probably will not be living in New York. It's just super expensive.
Is it possible to own a house in either New York or San Francisco?
I've written off owning a house.
Yeah. Okay.
I did that a while ago.
Talk about that money draft life, throwing money down the drain on rent.
Actually, it's not that bad. I did the price comparison, and I'm doing like, cause the obligation, if you put yourself into a 30-year mortgage, that means you want to stay where you're at. And you know,
right.
The property
people
taxes,
stay in the house for 30 years when they, yeah, that's what a 30-year mortgage means.
That's
you
how
can't
it works.
Move
I know, but ever. Like moving around. I'm just saying, like, it's like the obligation, that means you have less ability to travel around if you want to. You can be more mobile.
Not at all. You just sell your fucking house and you take the money that you got from selling your house you pay off that mortgage and then you're clear. Like, what do you think a mortgage is?
Whoa, you just sell off your house. Like, that's so easy of a process.
It is.
It is.
I mean, the alternative is literally taking your money, ripping it to shreds, and throwing it down the drain every month. So
that's literally not doing that. Like, I've done the cost analysis, paying rent, depending on where you do it. And
where you live, Marcel, where houses cost $1 million, that might be true.
Like, I've seen the realtor, I guess our landlord had a realtor do an analysis on their property, and they left it on my porch because the landlord lives underneath
us.
Sure.
Okay.
And so I was able to look at it. I didn't know what I was looking at. I saw what they got the mortgage for and what the down payment and how much their monthly payment is on top of their, insurance in Texas.
Yeah. And that's probably true in California and New York.
It's insane.
It's not true where Jason and I live.
Yeah.
They're losing money every month.
It's just not true where Jason and I live.
Oh my God. Like, for what I pay, my mortgage payment is a joke. It's, and my house is big. I've got more bathrooms than people living in my house. I've got a nice size yard. I get to have my grill out there. It's great to own a house. And my mortgage payment is about what it was for a one bedroom apartment rent. So it depends what part of the country you live in. I'm not paying for the California sunshine. I'm paying for, you know, the house I live in and, you know, the neighborhood and everything. So I'm really happy with my situation.
Yeah. To each their own. I just couldn't deal with the snow. To me, snow is just like, just not worth it for like, I would pay lots of money not to live in the snow.
We ain't got much snow in Oklahoma.
You ain't got much of anything else there either though. So
just a professional NBA team.
Hey, well, there you go. So should we talk about Magic or wait?
I guess we can talk about some Magic.
This is great after hours.
This is fine.
Wait, Jersey, I do got to say there was some good food out in New York. That's definitely one of the highlights that we had out there. At the end, we did go to Cat's Deli, and I will say I was severely disappointed. I was expecting, like, you know, an orgasm in my mouth.
Don't let them hear that.
It was a solid, I mean, it was good pastrami, but I actually had better pastrami out here in San Francisco. And they charged $20 for a sandwich. You're just like, good Lord. Like, this is not it. But the bagels are just phenomenal. You guys had a piece of that. And I think that steak dinner that we had was definitely probably the highlight.
Yeah, if the number of people assassinated in your steakhouse is zero, then you're going to have a tough time competing.
Yes, the steakhouse was definitely mobbed out. I will say about New York, though, the driving is insane. It's like the Wild West out there. Like, you got four lanes, and those drivers, like, they maneuver. I feel bad for, like, a timid driver. So it was, like, you know, crazy because San Francisco's got crazy driving, but New York was definitely a notch above. And then when I went to Mexico, holy shit. That beat fucking New York. They got cobblestones and the same thing. You got two lanes and taxi cabs just fighting for the same lane at the same time. Like, I thought it was nuts living in the city, but yeah, it gets crazier out there.
Yeah, I had my car in Jersey and I just left it in Jersey. I was like, I don't need to contribute one more car to the problem in New York City.
Yeah, that sounds pretty rough. All right, guys, Finance 101 this week, we're going to talk about bulk because we have an email here from, Lane Frost. He says, Brew Crew, hoping this doesn't seem like a dumb question, but it involves trading value for bulk. I know most people would automatically say don't do it, but I'm trying to get some more quantity in my binder, so I was hoping to do so with a couple of cards. Anyway, somebody wants my promo scavenging oozes for his bulk rares at 15 cents a piece. Whenever I've read articles about this, people say it's okay to ask for a bit of a premium as you're trading one money card for lots of smaller cards. I asked to value the SKUs at $10 as it was also one of my decks. My trade partner, without attempting to negotiate, began to freak out saying they were saying there was no way he would trade $10 in bulk for the SKUs as it would allow me to make an easy $4 if I sold to a vendor. We went back and forth for a while until I finally called off the trade. Was I in the wrong here? Should I not have asked for the premium? Sorry for the long question. I'm hoping to get some insight. Thanks. So just kind of the first thing to talk about for bulk is what exactly it is. And it's all of those rares that typically sit below 50 cents or below 75 cents on like your TCG player mid. And those go for usually 10 to 15 cents in cash to a dealer if you're selling them off. There's also a commons and uncommon bulk, which is typically $5 per thousand. But it seems like in this question, we're kind of talking about bulk rares. So, I mean, just kind of tackling the question, what do you guys think of trading, a card worth some number of dollars, in this case, six or so, for bulk?
I give people 25 cents trade value on their bulk rares. That seems like a fair way to do it. Like, it's 10 or 15 cents cash, but at the same time, if you're asking for full value retail on your stuff, the least you can do is give them 25 cents. Because not everybody knows that the market values 10 to 12 cents on a bulk rare. People hear a quarter on a crapper and they're like, yeah, all right, that seems fair.
Yeah,
so you're
still
getting 40 cards, and if you bulk them out, yeah, you're getting $4 instead of the 10 for the ooze, but you're not going to get all bulk rares. That's the other thing. I don't tell people what are bulk rares. I just tell them I'm looking for bulk rares and I let them pull out whatever they want.
Well, I mean, are you going to take somebody's $20 card that they think's a bulk rare?
I mean, if I want to sleep poorly at night.
Okay. That's what I thought. Just thought we would clarify that for people listening.
But
there's
a difference between
not telling someone their card is a dollar and you can buy a list for 50 cents and taking their $20
card. Here's a technique that I tried at GP Nashville a few years ago, and I've done it a little bit since. The guy wanted Phyrexian Obliterator, and it was like 25 at the time, and I told him I would put Obliterator at buy list, which was like 18. And I said I would take his rares at a quarter, but I got to pick them, and he could say yes or no. So there were several rares that were bulk rares, but like Troll and Toad needed them, and they were paying a buck.
Right, right.
So I just said, a quarter on those. But I mean, everything else I took was total crap.
So I think the important thing here is to understand, Lane, that if you're trading, say if you take those two piles, you have, if you're trading bulk rares, 15 cents a piece. If you were to take that every one of those bulk rares you have and take it to a dealer and sell it for 12 cents, you're getting, 80% of your trade value in cash. If he's to take that scavenging ooze to a dealer, that's $6 retail, he's going to get $3 in cash. So even at the straight across, prices you agreed on there, you're quote unquote winning. Now, the thing when you trade, one valuable card for lesser valuable cards and you ask a premium, it's kind of like if you're trading a $50 card for 10 $5 cards, is kind of where that applies. When it comes to bulk, when you're already dealing with a cash price or very near a cash price, in this case, 15 cents a piece, I can see people kind of scoffing at that. I mean, obviously it doesn't sound like your trade partner, took the proper way around this because he's getting some value just because he clearly could take those bulk rares himself to a dealer and get his scavenging news if it was that easy. So, in order to get that extra value, you would have been putting in work. So, I don't think you're in the wrong to ask that. I think that were he to come back with a realistic, I can't do that, this is why, you should be able to accept that. But it sounds like even if, your offer at the time was, not perfectly fair on his end, he handled it the wrong way.
I think your trade partner was a little bit unreasonable because if he knows that much about bulk rares and he's not willing to put in the work to get that value himself, like he's just trying to have it both ways.
Exactly.
He's trying to get full value for his bulk and not do any of the work to turn it into a real card.
Exactly.
So what about with bulk commons? Like, where do you guys price that out? Do you buy them from other people? How do you get rid of them while we're on the bulk subject?
If anybody wants bulk commons on commons, I'm selling them for $5 a thousand. Come get them. I mean, like, I don't know what to say beyond that. I buy them and sell them at the same price because I pick through them. So, I mean, in theory, it's easy to get rid of them until you get huge quantities of them. And then it's a little harder, but I don't know. There's not really, like,
so
any particular place
20,000,
to send it.
If you have 20,000, you know, bulk commons and uncommons sitting in your closet and you've looked through and pulled out the stuff you think is valuable, what do you do with those?
Attempt to sell them back to someone else who wants to, or you'd make lots out of them. However, making lots out of them is not all it's cracked up to be, because there are plenty of times when those lots are going to sell and you're still stuck with thousands of cards. Honestly, your best bet is to try and find a local store that is willing to take them off of you. And, a lot of stores will kind of have a cap on how much they'll take from you, but a lot of them will take something from you. Beyond that, I mean, it's really just a matter of depending on how many you have. Like 20,000, you shouldn't have a problem moving. You get into the hundreds of thousands and it becomes a little more difficult and you have to start talking to bigger stores, but most people, I guess, aren't moving that much. So I don't know. I don't sell to the local stores anymore. I deal with their bulk. So I'm probably not the right person to ask this, I guess.
I think one of the important things for people, at home who probably do have just lots of cards left over from their drafts over the past, you know, X years is to figure out which cards out of them are worth pulling. Because you may not think it is, but it truly is worth your time to go through, dig through that stuff. Because there are random commons that are worth money from old sets. Like if you have Mirrodin, I think it was Mirrodin, maybe not, whatever, wherever Serum Visions was from, you could randomly have a stack of $6 cards sitting there that you have completely forgotten about. Even on the smaller scale, there's plenty of $2 to $3 uncommons that add up if you pull them out. So if you have a bunch of that stuff, it truly is worth your time to, you know, look at the set on whether like MTG sucks or Star City or something and see which commons and uncommons are worth a few dollars and then look through your boxes for those. That really is worth your time if you have a spare day or a spare weekend to go through it.
So is it worth your time to buy bulk from other people? And like, yes. What would you buy it from?
Yeah.
And what about if it's already been picked?
I buy true bulk at, you know, $4 per thousand. So it's worth my time because I know I'll get five for it. And I'll pay five, maybe sometimes six, to get unpicked bulk because it's worth picking and I know I can sell it for five.
Yeah, depending on where the bulks come from, I've paid up to 20,000, but that's because I got to partially look through it first.
And there were rares in it, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds crazy, so.
Well, yeah, it depends. I mean, it was a store and the guy was like, you know, I want X amount per thousand. And I went and pulled a handful out and just handed him X amount per thousand because I got to look through it. But yeah, most of the time you're not going to get to look through it and you just want to stay around that five number to be safe. I mean, even up into the seven and eight, if you're willing to pick all the way down to the low end cards and you know the bulk hasn't been picked, it's not just someone telling you that, you can go in a little safer. But yeah, you have to be more careful, obviously, the more expensive it gets. Because if you're at five, you don't really have a chance of losing money. There's a theoretical loss of money in the fact that you don't have X amount to spend until you get it back out of the bulk.
Plus there's your time.
Right, exactly. But you don't actually lose money itself.
Okay.
I've really never been disappointed treasure hunting with bulk. You're always going to find something.
I have.
It's fun though. I mean, yeah. I've looked through 15,000 cards and found nothing before, and that's kind of unfortunate, but if you've paid the right price for it, it's fun because you feel like every little thing you find is winning. So you look through 500 cards and you hit a card that's $2 and you're like, oh, sweet, free money. So
what I love is the guy who like has painstakingly looked up every single bulk rare on TCG Player and then has a foil days in his bulk.
I mean, but this is, yeah, and I've had people come sell me stuff, and when somebody brings in a bunch of cards to sell a collection to the store, I'll look through all of their rares and pull out the stuff that's worth money, and I just, you know, give them buy lists on that sort of stuff. But if they tell me, oh, these 5,000 cards here are commons and uncommon bulk, I'm not going to look through that. You know, they're just not worth my time. It's not a thing. And I found lots of valuable rares and mythics in that bulk before. I mean, people just need to. Yeah, like Jay said, you just have to go through your stuff. It really is worth your time, especially if you plan on selling it.
Yeah, so that sounds like picking is a whole other finance 101 we got to do on a different week.
Yeah, I mean, there's lot of different ways we can talk about it, but, you know, just in a nutshell, look at the sets, figure out which cards are worth more than $2, go take more than $1.50, whatever, go pull them out of your bulk.
All right,
guys, let's move on to the next email here. This is titled, Which Foils Choose, from Michael Oliver. He says, hey guys, I love the podcast. I've got a pretty quick question. I've recently started to move my collection into foils and reserve list cards. My goal is to focus on a cube. Oh God.
Yeah!
My goal is to focus on a cube and a couple of commander decks. When picking foils, is it best to go for the original set foil, or are promos okay too? Also, for cards where a foil is available, but an older black border exists, what are your thoughts? Such as Sylvan Library, there's a black border Legends, or a Commander's Arsenal foil. Are certain versions better investments than others? Keep up the good work on the podcast. Thanks, Michael. You know you want to talk about it, so tell us about Cube.
Cube is the best format on the planet, unlike EDH, which is actually, something.
That's not exactly what I meant. Tell us about value in the Cube.
It really comes down to what's important to you. Depends on the promo. It really is. I would say pack foils are better than going for promo foils. And depending on old border, do you want to go for a black border or old border one compared to a foil version? I would go for the old border, but people that foil out all their cubes, like TSG, he will get the foil version, I think, the oldest foil version that he'll get. It really depends on what your tastes are and what you want out of your cube. So it's up to you to get, I guess, a style guide and stick to it and remain consistent. Like with mine, I was trying to get all old borders foiled and just those. And I do have some other cards that are foiled, but I am not interested in doing anything modern. Border foils, especially nowadays, I just say modern foils, like you can see the individual inkjet, printing on there, and it just looks really, the artwork's horrible. Like a Chromanticore, it looks disgusting compared to the regular Chromanticore, so, whatever. I'm just ranting.
Interesting. I mean, in general, obviously the set foils are in general, the hold up better than a promo. There are some, exceptions to this when you get into really rare promos, stuff like Mutavault, things like that, that are really special. But I mean, for the most part, your original printing foil is the best bet.
What about for EDH? How does that factor in, Jason?
It's really personal preference. Obviously the older bordered stuff is good, but I mean, it is a format where people want to, make their decks optimal. Like, I don't like to say pimp their deck out because I don't want anybody having sex with my EDH deck, even if they pay me. Bling's fine. People like to make their deck look shiny. So some stuff like that isn't the Commander's Arsenal. Like, if it weren't for the Commander's Arsenal Sylvan Library, there wouldn't be one right answer because some people would I have an alt fourth Sylvan Library and I think that's pretty sweet and that nobody knows that it's not fourth edition. So, it's your own personal. I have that in there because it makes me happy. But if there isn't a foil version, then it's just some people like Korean, some people like simplified Chinese, whatever. It's there's no real right answer. So if you're looking at reserve list cards, most of that stuff, almost 100% of it's not going to be foil. So it doesn't really matter. Just get the most expensive version, I guess, because if it's expensive now, it's, going to be more expensive later.
And I will stress, try to go for the near mint or minty if you can make it happen.
Marcel, near mint's not good enough for you, so.
No, but Marcel does have a point there. Like, as someone who has to buy the foils back, if somebody brings me cards even a little jacked up, they are so much harder to get rid of. He's absolutely right, though. Buy near mint. That's correct.
Slightly played is not going to be fun when you want to move the cards later.
And if you don't think you're ever going to sell them, go ahead and get whatever the hell you want. But the difference on sites like TCG Player is 30 cents. So just get the near mint. Don't just buy the cheapest copy, buy the cheapest near mint copy.
Yeah, if you're buying for you. Now, I like the fact that the difference is only 30 cents because some people will take a really jacked up card just to save themselves 30 cents. And I like being the guy selling in that position.
Yeah, if I was still selling on TCG Player, I would care. But
that was real passive aggressive. I like it.
Yep, no problem. You can leave that in there.
now it's just aggressive.
And there were some people that reached out to me and said they understood where I was coming from. Your boy Joey D, he actually said, yeah.
Yeah, he gave me shit on text message this morning, and he's still wrong.
No, I think it's a load of crap too with the TCG thing because now signatures are heavily played across the board.
Yeah. No, I know. I'm not happy about that.
Well,
sorts of stupid crap like that that's not okay.
To follow up on this, I mean, I got cards from TCG Direct this week for my new Mayel Commander deck and they are very much not near mint. And I'm not really sure
how this is fixed when it's TCG Player Direct. Because like Ryan spoke about last week, they just have a pile of cards that are labeled near mint. I mean, who's really going and picking out that card for me? I can't contact Acello directly and say this was wrong, as I understand it. So, yeah, I mean, certainly some kinks with the new system. But yeah. All right, let's hit the next email here. This is a good one, I think. This is from Brendan Spearin. It says, "Hey, gang, love the podcast. It's a great way to attempt to keep playing Magic as cheap as possible. I bought a box of Conspiracy that I drafted with my friends, and I got a few gems from it, including Explorers, Misdirection, Stifles, and a few really awesome foils, including Brainstorm and Lore Seeker. I traded the Brainstorm for some cons fetches, but I didn't even know that the Lore Seeker was worth money until I was looking at it online. It's listed on eBay for upwards of $80. Did I make the right move with Foil Brainstorm? Would love to hear your thoughts. I'm torn on what I should do with this card. Should I buy list it or wait to sell off the Lore Seeker? I have a few other foil conspiracy cards, and I'm wondering what you think the projection will be on these bad boys. All the best, Brendan." What do you guys think? This is, I think, something we haven't talked about a lot, but is certainly worth talking about.
So it's interesting because I hadn't really thought about this side of the conspiracy. So a lot of these cards are reprints, but for the ones that are not reprints, and especially, I guess I can see both sides of it. The main thing is these probably aren't getting reprinted again. And though a lot of Conspiracy was opened, it did kind of fall off pretty quick as soon as M15 came out. And though, you know, it was still on shelves, but it was the same boxes on shelves that have been there for the past couple months. It's not like it's still continually moving as far as what I can see. I guess I don't have the numbers or anything like that, so don't quote me.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like the stores are moving that much of it since an actual set has come out at that point, especially since cons, at the very least. So I don't think there's going to be a ton of these going into the market and dropping the price anymore. So we might be at the bottom. But at the same time, I think right now, I think it was Marcel who had mentioned this last week, a lot of people have, like, it's just kind of an auto include into all cubes right now. You know, put a lot of conspiracy cards in, just everybody, it's a new thing, everybody's kind of into it. Down the road, though, that may not necessarily be the case. And some of them, you know, it might be certain ones make it, certain ones don't. I feel like that one's a pretty safe one because that's the one that adds a pack, right?
Yeah, that's a good one to have, I think.
That's the sweetest one. Yeah.
So, I mean, so that's a good one. That's kind of like having a booster tutor foil at this point. Like, I feel like that's kind of a card that will continue to be in it. But some of the other ones that may still be really expensive, but you don't necessarily see being in every cube or, you know, in every form of where you can currently play them, you might want to move now.
Yeah, I think they may slowly go up over time because, like, they're pretty much only played in cube. And
yeah,
like the people that want them, they got them by now. And like people, I mean, I'm not going to spend $80 to get a foil Lore Seeker.
But there are people building new cubes that will. It's not to say that they will have no demand. It's just that you kind of have to weigh, is that demand right now and what drove the initial price up going to be enough to keep it up to that price? And I think the only ones that are going to be that way are the ones like Lore Seeker that are Lore Broker or whatever it is that is going to be in most of these coming cubes over the next years.
I think that especially you look at something like Dak Fane too, which is another very expensive foil. Dak Fane could be printed somewhere else, but a lot of the conspiracy specific cards are unlike, you know, and this is an age where everything is reprintable, right? So you look for those things that are less reprintable and these conspiracy specific cards seem pretty tough to reprint. It'd have to be a Conspiracy 2 sort of thing, which is certainly possible, but it's several years away.
But
and then are they
like,
really going to reprint them? I feel like there's actually pretty good upside on a lot of these foils from Conspiracy, especially if you can find some of the stuff that, you know, maybe is included in a lot of cubes, but isn't as well known as something like Lore Seeker. You know, if there are any gems there, and honestly, I haven't done a lot of research into Conspiracy foils, which is why I liked this email. I definitely feel like the upside is there if you can find some gems.
Oh, I just looked at a TCG player. It's only $35 ship near mint foil. So that was $80, I believe. So it's already.
Well, it was listed on eBay, he said, I think is the point. It hadn't sold. So.
Well, I mean, you got just several copies at $35. So that's the price of it.
Yeah, that sounds like a more realistic price. Yeah. I mean, yeah. So, you know, that's kind of my, I think it, those foils kind of, those good Conspiracy foils slowly go up. Let's hit his other question is, did he make the right move trading away the Foil Brainstorm for fetches?
Yeah, really.
I'm a little torn on that one. Foil Brainstorm.
Yeah, Foil Brainstorm. Is it a Conspiracy Foil Brainstorm though, right? Yeah.
Honestly, yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. I don't know. I'm not in your fucking world of shit.
Of reading the email.
Well, I'm not reading the email. You just raised up.
Yeah.
It depends also where you got, what price you got the fetches at, obviously, but I don't know. I think you're fine. If you wanted fetches to play with, you took something that was essentially a bonus out of the conspiracy box. You got a draft and got fetches out of it. I mean, don't feel bad about it either way. If you gave up a little EV or not.
If you got five fetches for it, is that, they're $50 right now or something for the foil? That wouldn't be bad.
I mean, five fetches is more like 60, honestly. So it's fine, really.
Yeah. I mean, it's not bad. And it depends on where you just want to be at. With side defense. So it was a fairly even trade, I think.
Yeah. All right. Especially if you're not going to do anything with that brainstorm, but have it sit in your binder. You're certainly going to get use out of the fetches. So, let's move on to our next subject, which is a big one. Star City changes. We now have essentially Star City Grand Prix happening across the United States every week. There are fewer Legacy Opens that will be covered. There are some now, it's basically have Legacy Grand Prix added, and there's still Legacy 5Ks. But it will not be on coverage except for those certain weekends. I think we all agree up front that Star City basically making the move from one day opens to Grand Prix is a great sign for the growth of the game, right? I mean, they had so many people playing that they couldn't get enough rounds in.
Yep. I hope that in 5 years, there are five more companies doing five more major tournament series the same way. Like this is the step that it takes to make the game go from where it is, because Wizards is clearly able to up what they are doing, but I don't think they are willing to up what they are doing at a quick enough rate for the growth of the game at a competitive level. People want to be able to play Magic every weekend in some areas, and the more opportunities they have to do that, the more people who will actively play Magic every weekend. Like, if your area right now doesn't, you know, only gets one major event a year, it's easier to get your local players more enthused about competitive Magic if you have more major events within the, you know, 3-4 hour region of you than it is to convince people to try and drive, you know, 12-8 hours to be able to get to these major events. So especially for people like you, Corbin, I imagine if there was 3 or 4 events, you know, coming through Oklahoma, it'd be a lot easier to convince your local players to go, hey, maybe we should be playtesting, maybe we should be playing at the local shops more. Because, you know, there's this tournament series coming through, not just in 6 months, but in 2 months and 2 months after that and another month after that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people around here are, they're making small trips of several hours to go play in Star City, IQs or, you know, premier events or however many different levels of Star City events they are. They travel for those. They're traveling for TCG player events. It's not just the Grand Prix that comes through. Well, that now we have one Grand Prix a year, but it used to be the Grand Prix that came through Dallas every year was like our one chance to go play competitive in a reasonable driving distance. So it is really nice to see. And it seems like every year Star City has upped, you know, the interest has grown every year. I mean, like I said, these smaller Star City events are drawing people now. TCG players kind of, you know, the next one on its way up. And I'm sure there'll be something behind it. As long as Magic continues to grow, these things will follow along, and they help it to grow, so.
What I saw also was the Star City Classic, which wasn't a full open, it was just a Saturday event, and it was in like a completely different region of the country from where the open was, and I thought that was cool, and they, you know, don't really do as many of those as they could. You know, I wish they did more of those, but, you know, maybe they will. It seems like they're getting a little bit ballsier.
It's hard for them, I think, to split as your personnel costs go up so much with those.
Yeah, but I mean, you're the only buyer at a Classic.
Yeah, I mean, that's all great. It's just a question of if they broadcast some, they have to have double equipment. If they
don't.
You have to, but you do
it's
still
just
have
like,
to.
It's just like a big, like,
right.
PTQ.
But you still have deal. To staff that with, like, it's not just your typical PTQ expenses, right? Because you're Star City, you have to have someone type up deck lists and all that stuff. There is additional stuff to that.
I mean,
also, they just may be getting simply less play because they aren't on coverage, you know, so.
So, speaking of getting less play, what is this gonna do to Legacy?
I don't think it's really gonna, like, honestly, it's not gonna hurt Legacy. If anything, you know, they're still doing a 5K. The people who wanna play Legacy are still going to play Legacy. It might not be on camera, so you're losing some of the interest, but at the same time, I feel like most of the people who aren't willing to make the trips to these events on a constant basis and are only watching them are more interested in Standard anyway. So,
I mean, there's a lot of people upset about losing their Legacy coverage.
Yeah,
but
they've
on the
been
other
upset
hand,
before, you know,
right,
people have been wrong before.
And on the other hand, though, this adds 3 Legacy Grand Prix a year, in a sense. You know, it's not just we watch 1 8-round tournament on Sunday. Every week it's there. Now it really makes it more of an event. You know, it's 3 times a year. It's 3 times in the first 6 months, I guess, is what the schedule release was. But now people are like, oh, it's a Legacy event this weekend. I want to watch it. It makes it more of a, you know, a viewing event than it does, oh, there's a Legacy on every weekend, I may catch it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so I mean, all right, we got one other kind of...
No more emails, no more emails.
No. We've got one more kind of at-large magic kind of thing to talk about here, and that is the hate train against Zari Lax. Jason, you want to talk about this?
Yeah, okay, so what brought this up was Zari Lax turned a 6-3 into a 7-2, basically by, he was dead on board, he scooped everything up, he's like, ah, I'm dead. Then he noticed his opponent scooped all his stuff up too, and he's like, why didn't you reveal what your morph creature was? And his opponent went, and then RA called a judge. Got a game win, won the match, made day two. A lot of people were pretty upset at RA for this and said, you know, it was a bullshit move, he was gaming. They went and dug up a 2-year-old interview he did where he talked about how he, you know, abandoned a playtesting session for someone who played a Brainstorm EOT during playtesting and said, you know, there are Reed Dukes of the world and then there are the RA Laxes. You know, it's just more we hate RA Lax bullshit, you know, online. And I'm kind of getting a little bit sick of it because it's a little bit hypocritical because it really, you almost think if RA Lax were handsomer or, you know, played worse, maybe he wouldn't get so much crap. I mean, we personally know Ari, but it's not like I like him that much. He's just a guy, and I think he's getting a little bit more shit than he should, personally. And I don't know where it's coming from. Maybe a place of jealousy. I don't really know. But my first foray into this was writing an article for the free site of QS where I talked about, you know, I basically wrote a scene where I exaggerated what he actually did with the Zergo Helm Smasher when he top decked the fetch to go find the planes for it. He just sort of, you know, threw it on the mat, basically like, yeah, got there. And, you know, everyone was giving him shit then. It's just, it's really weird because you didn't see, you know, people saying the same thing when that Chinese player top decked the bonfire against Kibler. You didn't really see that anytime anyone else has had a game winning top deck and they sort of threw their hand on the mat and extended their hand to their opponent or whatever. It's really weird that RA Lax specifically is getting all this hate, and I don't really know where it's coming from other than he just seems kind of arrogant, and people are potentially missing out on lessons on how to get better at Magic because they don't like him personally. I think that's a mistake.
I think there's I agree in large part with what you said. There are, having, you know, talked to RA Lax several times during coverage, all that, he's always been extremely helpful, very nice. He is prone to hyperbole, I think, and that's where, like, the Brainstorm, I'll walk away comment came from. I don't think it was even, like, somebody played a Brainstorm against me into turn and I walked away. He's just exaggerating, this is how much I discredit a playtesting session when someone does this because it's such a basic mistake. You know, at the Pro Tour in Hawaii that he won, he did all these things very excitedly, and it's not with any ill intent, but at the same time, you can see how it would come across like that to some people. I think at the Grand Prix, the problem is not necessarily the way he got to day two, but his tweet in specific was 6-3. Oh wait, you didn't reveal your morph. 7-2. Which makes it seem like you're celebrating your opponent's making a dumb mistake. You know, so like it takes away, I think, hey, I was dead on board, but my opponent made a mistake and the rules say he lost the game and now I'm in day two and that's great. It's kind of like, oh, he screwed up. That's great. Now I'm in day two. You know, it's just kind of you can see how that wording, you can see how people take offense to it. At the same time, you have to understand that he's sitting there sitting on his phone after he's excited that something like that happened and it puts him to day two. He's playing by the rules. You know, I don't think there's any ill will behind it. I don't think there's any malice. At the same time, you know, he is in a much more public position now having so well in the Pro Tour that people are following his every move. So stuff like this can't be taken out of context and blown up.
Okay. Well, there you go. Watch your public image. And there's that. Cause then you might end up being like Jordy Tate, who's a bane on the planet.
Is that the takeaway message? Cause I thought the takeaway message was shut up and stop whining about our relax.
And or reveal your morphs at the end of a game.
Reveal those morphs.
Well, how about Wizards tries to change that? Or there's got to be some kind of way to work the system.
Like how?
Ari said he doesn't like that rule, but it is the rule.
This is true.
You know, I think the best thing they could do with that rule is to change it based on the RE level. At a Grand Prix, you should absolutely get a game loss for failing to reveal your morphs. At FNM, you probably shouldn't.
At FNM, I don't think, I mean, anyone's even going to know that.
It's rarely enforced, I agree.
Speaking of morphs, how about this new dual decks they got going on? The dual decks anthology.
That's not really new.
It isn't?
News.
Oh, I thought
this has been announced for several months.
Oh, shows what I know. It's $100. Was that announced?
MSRP, we kind of knew it would be. It's $5 $20 decks, so why not?
It's this eight is really decks, bad. Actually.
It's eight.
It's eight.
Oh
decks.
Yeah, it's four sets. I'm not happy about it.
Why is that?
Because it hurts the value of the old sealed decks. The old some of them. Some of the cards that were just printed in there were worth quite a bit of money, and that was a good thing. People were willing to pay the money just to have, from a collector's standpoint, to have the old sealed decks. I was sitting on a few Knights versus Dragons that I managed to get from MSRP a year after I should have been able to do that. This is just, it hurts the future collectability of dual decks too. It basically makes the dual decks trash going forward. Like, if you maybe I might want to sit on one of the popular... No, trash.
It's another example of Wizards reprinting everything, which is good or bad depending on your perspective.
I think it's a good thing. I think maybe the dual deck shouldn't be a sacred cow, and, it should be reprinted like the Commander sets are. And, sure that you lose this potential for the finance community.
They reprint Commander sets.
They went back and reprinted Commander 1 in its entirety.
Yeah, and someone who had Inferno, they paid $125 for. They're like, oh, that's worth dick now.
I think the only thing is that dual decks were never necessarily marketed as a limited edition. And that's kind of the difference. If From the Vault anthologies came out, that I think you'd have a really legitimate complaint. The dual decks were never marketed as limited edition. The first ones just didn't sell a lot because they flew under the radar and then they got expensive.
I mean, I'm not losing money here. Just when I saw that they were doing that, I kind of that face you make when you can, like, kind of smell a fart? That was, like, my initial reaction. to make that face, whatever that means.
You're
that
so jaded of a finance person. To me, this is, like, an awesome thing to get people involved and wanting to play some Magic that are not, that don't really know Magic too well.
Why do they play? They have a new one every 3 months.
But this is all in one package. Have you seen it? Like, the all in one package?
Are these dual decks? Are these $100?
They're not for...
Yeah, Marcel.
Oh, I don't know anything about Magic the Gathering. I'm going to go out and spend $100 on a limited edition. Yeah. Like, really?
I think so.
These are
I think this is for people that don't want to play Magic, play a lot of Magic. Like, this is for you to break out with people that are not experienced in Magic or barely play enough Magic. It's kind of like a cube,
Where
you
have
they literally have stuff for that, yeah. Marcel. They have different products that are for new players. They have 30 card decks to teach people how to play Magic. This is just for people who didn't get their Knights vs. Dragons or whatever their Divine vs. Demonic, and now they're really expensive. These are for Magic players to get their cards.
Every single one of those dual decks opened in sleeves that I'm trying to sell for somebody, I can't get shit for them. They're worth nothing. So it's not like they did the reprint to keep the price down, because you can go on Craigslist, you can buy any collection, and you can get an open Knights vs. Dragons for $4. So all this did was hurt the value of the sealed ones, and that's bullshit.
I guess. I mean, I'm fine with them reprinting it, but it's just for people who want to buy them in their entirety and have it. I'm fine with it. It doesn't necessarily hurt a lot. It kind of sucks for those people who are holding on to them sealed, but that's not what these were for in the first place. These are for people to play.
Magic should be for players. Players first. Fuck all the finance people.
I would have a problem if something like Commander's Arsenal or From the Vault, things that have been marketed as limited.
We heard that already. This
yeah, that's where the issue would be.
I like that when you said it earlier. That was a good
I know.
Point.
Corbin, now you're reiterating. Whatever. Now you're just reiterating yourself.
Cut it out then. That's
Corbinception.
No, I think we should leave in this, and we should leave in all the mockery also.
Exactly.
Great. Perfect.
So let's bring on into the next topic. We're going to have a Teespring again.
Is that why you said spring?
No, that's not why I said spring.
Oh, that's good, because that would be really clunky and terrible. But if that's not why you said it, then that's fine.
Okay, let's tee off into the next topic.
Okay, that's acceptable. That I liked.
Okay, so we're doing a Teespring. If you guys don't know what this is, it's basically like Kickstarter for shirts. You can buy a shirt if you want. We need to sell 30. We're going to have hoodies. There's going to be three different colors of regular shirts. There's going to be two different colors of hoodies, and there'll be two different colors of female shirts. So check them out. We'll have the in the show notes. You'll be able to get the link to buy the t-shirts. It's going to be up for 3 weeks. So that's from the – so that'll probably end on the 19th. So you got all the way to December 19th. And I know this is probably bad timing with Christmas and everything.
This is the worst possible timing.
We should have like, done it like
the
last
week of
month.
Thanksgiving to just before Christmas when people – historically have the most disposable income.
Well, hey, I didn't have time to do it until now. And so it's better to get some t-shirts out there this year while we can, because, you're going to want to support Ray. You're going to see Ray at Worlds, and then you're going to want to wear a Brainstorm Brewery t-shirt.
Yeah. Just think it could be you being asked where the Brainstorm Brewery is and you having to come up with a lie to tell people. So, you know, have to admit that you're a giant nerd.
Yeah. I was hoping to get this out in time so that we could get a shirt to Ray or a new hoodie to Ray, but this is what it is. I can't rely on anybody else to help do these type of things.
Oh, Jesus. Listen to Marcel.
Oh, my God. You should see them. These guys, just they run around with their dicks in their hands. This is a shit fest.
No wonder you can't go cube at the LGS. There's no room on the subway for you to carry your cross. Oh.
Wow.
Shots fired.
This got mean. You started being mean to me.
What happened.
You started being mean to me and it just kept going.
I wasn't 100% serious, but if you guys want to take it that way, yeah, we can make it.
All right. So yes, Teespring, I'm looking forward to getting a hoodie because I don't have one yet.
Shut up, Corbin.
Oh, okay.
Is what it'll say on the back.
We do need to do that Teespring at some point again. We tried to do that 2 years ago and it almost got there.
We did
but
not sell 30 Shut Up Corbin t-shirts.
Oh, what a tragedy.
Really surprised me.
But I don't think we had 30 episodes up at that point. So, you know, I think we may hit that this next time. We'll see. We'll do that probably in February or March. We'll do a Shut Up Corbin limited edition Brainstorm Brewery. Yeah. We'll make that happen. Oh, they got camo, t-shirts. So we could do it on Corbin on a camo t-shirt.
Why? So we should get a t-shirt, a hoodie that is Bud Light Lime Green.
This was all fascinating. Great podcasting.
I know.
Shut up, Corbin. Why don't you repeat something you said 15 minutes ago?
I have no response because I'm trying this new thing where I don't feed the trolls.
Was that like your new League of Legends tactic?
Is it because you've been banned for being toxic so many times?
I've never been toxic in my life.
So where can people reach you guys? You know, we haven't done that in a while.
I don't need to be reached.
Ryan is, Ryan was skinning a deer or something earlier.
Oh my God. Why are we going on this? I grew up in the country. I'm sorry that, you know, that's not something like you of all people living in Oklahoma. I would assume it's a normal thing around there, but.
Oh yeah. We texted Ryan earlier and said, when can we podcast? He said, just a few minutes. I'm butchering a deer.
Yeah. I'm sorry that I grew up in the country.
That's actually sucking. Badass.
Is it? Because I find deer to be cute animals that should not be butchered.
Well, I think you haven't lived through a Michigan winter and wanted some venison to eat and not wanted to spend outrageous prices on terrible meat at the store.
I mean, I actually won't lie. I've eaten deer before. That's not really the point, though.
That's because you don't live in a place where it's a real hazard every time you're driving. Like, on the highway, you're like, oh, I hit a deer, and I was going 70, and now I'm dead. Like,
yeah, you're right. They probably don't have wild. They don't have wild animals in Oklahoma.
Probably not.
Have you ever plucked your chicken so you could make your Buffalo Wild Wings?
I have never personally murdered a chicken. I have dressed fish before.
Oh, okay.
Then it's what's the difference?
It's just funny because you said you're butchering a deer.
I'm sorry. Well, like one of my arms was,
well,
you know,
Bambi is cuter
door.
Than a fish, so.
I mean, that's your
you
opinion.
You think Bambi's cuter than Flounder from A Little Mermaid? Or
this
Nemo?
This is possibly the most asinine conversation we've ever had.
You started it. You're the one who pointed out.
Look at
you're the weak link on this podcast. Oh, was that too mean? Wow. Okay.
I was absolutely fine with where I was.
See, you guys were joking and you had to get all serious and shit, Jason. Damn.
Anyways, so you can't find Ryan unless you're a dead deer. He'll find you. You can find me at Chosler88, CHOSLER88 on Twitter and on Quiet Speculation and on impeople.com.
No one goes to any of those sites for you. You could have just skipped yours too. It would have been about as helpful.
Hey, he's got more Twitter followers than you do somehow.
Oh.
Because he's on Twitter. That's the key. I've like gained 400 followers. Since
here we
I
go with this again.
This, I this could have more Twitter followers than you if I wanted to, but lucky for you, I don't.
Well, I mean,
we hear this every couple weeks. For
I could have thousands of Twitter
years.
Followers for the price of about $20 if I wanted to.
Yeah, we actually looked into it. We almost convinced somebody to.
It's really not very expensive.
1,000 followers. It's like $4 for 1,000 followers.
Yeah, I thought like whoever did that did something pretty badass. No, they were actually.
No, they just spent $4 and ruined an hour.
You could spend $1,500 and get someone a million followers.
The backstory is somebody bought Jason like 3,000 Russian followers that he had to go manually remove every one of them.
I didn't have a problem with it, but Marcel's like, man, it's going to look bad. People are going to think you bought these followers for yourself to make yourself look good. He's like, I want you to delete them. I'm like, I don't care what you think, Marcel, but he persisted. So I was like,
nope. But then you did it anyways.
I thought it was hilarious.
Integrity.
Jason, Marcel, where can we find you guys on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter, MarcelMTG. And you cannot find me on Facebook or anywhere else because I don't subscribe to that bullshit.
My God.
I don't subscribe to that bullshit.
What do you want? What do you want? This is our hardcore podcast.
This is the best after hours we've ever recorded.
This is everybody complains about everything.
They're going to complain about stuff. Podcast. You just got to go.
I just hate you so much, Corbin. You can find me on the Twitter, Jason Eolt. You can find me on Reddit. I'm Jason Eolt MTG. I'm on Facebook. I use my real name on Facebook like a boss, and I write for Quiet Speculation, and I write articles about EDH for Gathering Magic, and I'm just a really solid dude. All my tweets are hilarious. My Facebook posts are funny and insightful, and I make everybody's lives a little better just by knowing me.
Oh, man. Thank you, Jason. You can send tributes to Jason in the form of butchered deer. Butchered deers.
No, don't say that because someone will actually send him a deer carcass. That's...
Oh, so my wife and I just got a Costco membership because Costco just opened in Kalamazoo. A freezer is like $150 at Costco. So they know their target audience. They know that people are going to be in Costco like, we can't buy all this shit. We need a freezer. And then they'll see that freezers are practically free. So, you know what? Go ahead and buy me a deer carcass. I'll buy a freezer to put it in.
What a story.
Yep, I don't.
That is a good story.
Adventures in Suburbia. They got a Costco. It was big news.
Yeah, why don't you
what
let me know when,
Oklahoma.
When Oklahoma gets a dentist.
Great. You're right. You got me.
He got you. You should just quit now. Quit now while you're ahead, Corbin.
He doesn't sound happy that I got him.
You guys are assholes.
Sounds like you guys aren't even friends.
We can be found on GatheringMagic.com and BrainstormBrewery.com.